One of the approaches I've been working with recently is something which came originally out of the Bacana Institute, actually, and work which Tim, my brother, had been doing with Debbie Freeser, and I think Meg Wheatley had been involved in the conversation and folks at Bacana. And it was a very kind of nice, simple concept about transition from old systems to new systems. And they identified four core roles to play. And, well, in their materials, actually, I've seen three, but we added, but when Tim brought it in, we had four. And those four core roles were, the first one was protecting the good in the old. So what's the good stuff in the old system that we need to protect so that we don't throw the baby out with the bathwater? The second was hospicing the old. So how do we help the old system to die gracefully and fertilize the soil for the new rather than toxify it? The third was creating the conditions for the emergence of the radically new. And the fourth role was illuminating the difference between the old and the new and bridging the gap. So we actually, when we did our Art of Hosting at the end of last year, we actually structured it around those four roles. So we had one day focusing on each, which was really powerful, and particularly powerful to spend a day on the Art of Hosting Death, as we very explicitly called it. And so maybe to spend a bit of time just going into each of those, and then talk a little bit about how we've just been applying it in the Environment Ministry here in the Netherlands. So that first one, protecting the good in the old, is a really critical one. Often in renewal, we forget about it because it's like the new, the new, the new. And we forget to honor the path we've walked, and we forget to honor the contribution that people have made over the last years. And we also forget that the old system once was new. The old system emerged in response to a need, and that need we still need to take into account. So it's not as if that need has disappeared. It's just it's often run its course and got stale and got stuck and generated its own sets of problems. So we need to go back and ask ourselves, why did we ever organize ourselves in that way in the first place? What was it that we were really trying to achieve with it, and how do we make sure that we don't lose the essence of what it was we originally were trying to achieve, so that we still have a foundation on which to build as we move on. Otherwise, we throw out our foundation, we try to move forward, and we kind of fall through the floor because there's nothing there to jump from, as it were. And the other important thing about protecting the good and the old, honoring it and taking it forward, is that people who have been involved in contributing to that old system need to feel that all their work in the last years has been of some value. And of course it has, because it's got us to where we are now. So to be able to say and make really explicit from, these things which we were doing before are still really important, and we still need to be doing them and take them into the next phase, means that the old guard, as it were, can relax and go, oh, okay, good, good, good. So they actually have seen me, they actually recognize the stuff we've done, and we're still needed, and we still need to keep doing some of this. So it enables them to relax. Otherwise, what you find is that they kind of panic and cling on to the old system, and consciously or subconsciously end up sabotaging our attempts at renewal. So protecting the good and the old is important. And then I think actually our biggest blind spot, certainly in my conversations with people, is around the second one, which is hospicing the old system. So really paying attention to how do we help the stuff which really does need to die and be let go of? How do we help it to die gracefully and in such a way that, in the same way that when an apple falls off a tree, and we let it just kind of rot, it fertilizes the soil and plants its seeds in the soil for a new apple tree to emerge. So how do we help old systems, old ways? And it can be an old belief systems, it can be old individual behaviors, but it could also be specific job functions, or it could be a unit in an organization, or it could be the whole organizational structure, or whatever it is, or a whole culture. whatever it is, if it needs to be let go of, we need to make sure that we really do that with care. In the same way that, you know, when an individual is dying, we've developed a lot of insight into how to help people transition gracefully into the next phase and really let go, so they don't spend their last years kind of desperately clinging on to life when really it's ready to go. So, so that's a really important one, and one which, you know, when we looked at it in the environment ministry here, was the one where people said that's the one we really don't pay any attention to, you know, which means again that you get this kind of, I think if you were to look at it systemically, and by systemically I'm thinking around organizational constellations and things like that, that when you look at the energetics of a system, often the blockages are somewhere in the past where some past action or contribution hasn't been honored, and the energy's got stuck, and it's still interfering with the present organization and its attempt to really move on, and yet something's really hanging in there. So, you know, the way I think we really, it's like almost, if you think at an individual level, it's almost like the ghost of the past, you know. If we don't help somebody die gracefully, bury them properly and give them a good ritual and help them to let go, then they kind of get caught in this halfway zone, you know, the soul doesn't leave the earth planet and it hangs around tormented because it hasn't been released properly. I think we can probably think in a similar way about organizations and systems, that if we don't really help it die in probably quite a strong ritualized way, honor it for the contribution it's made, think back on its lifetime and what it's done, and then formally bury it and round it off and give it some closure, then the ghost of that part of the system will hang around and continue to haunt us and just get in the way of the renewal that we're trying to create. So that piece around hospicing and the art of hosting death, of the death of systems, I think is a critical one. And we can learn a lot, I think, from how what's been developed around the individual. And I can't remember her name, but there's a woman who's done a lot on that. Do you know a German name?
Elizabeth Kubler-Ross.
Kubler-Ross, exactly. Right. Those kind of five phases that we go through when we know we are going to die, when we know somebody close to us is going to die, and I don't have them at my fingertips. But you know, to be thinking about how those apply to organizational systems, and I know some work has been done on that, but you know, that kind of thinking of the process of dying, because often what tends to happen is that the people at the top decide, okay, things are going to change. Now, from the moment that the people at the top decide that, they begin their process of letting go and grieving, so they have time to deal with it. And then they say, and then they plan to announce it to the organization maybe, you know, a few weeks later. And often what they then do and say to the organization is, okay, it's going to change, and now we want you to renew. And what happens is that they don't give the rest of the organization and the people in the organization the time to go through their own grieving process, their own kind of mourning process of the fact that something's being let go of. Whereas they have had time to go through it themselves, and they don't realize that actually you need a few weeks in the organization for people to get used to the idea, you know, for people to kind of let the emotions work through before you can immediately say to them, oh, jump in, you know, now we want you to start doing everything new. You've got to go through a certain process. So really important, I think, to give that one attention, one which we haven't developed much skill in, I don't think, so far, and so one which would be really good to do some good learning around.
There's also a lot of taboos, yeah, around death and dying. So there's a lot of stuff that's implicit that needs to be made explicit. I think that's an important part of it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think in generally in our culture, we find that whole subject difficult. So we're really going to learn about it. We're going to have to learn about it, you know, as our planet goes into this transition as well, because there's going to be a lot of death, you know, and letting go. So how we deal with that properly. So those two roles of protecting the good in the old and hospicing the old are related to the release of the old system, let's say. And then the next two roles are related to the emergence of the new system. And the the first one in that, so that third role, is then the creating the conditions for the emergence of the radically new. So we're not talking here about a little upgrade of the old. We're talking about, fundamentally new stuff, which really we can't see or predict from the place we're at in our old system. So it's like someone was describing it to me the other day as if the monk, the monk sitting in their room transcribing texts by hand. If you then went into them and tried to explain to them about computers, printers, and the internet, totally, totally, totally beyond their ability to even conceive of that. Now, the kind of change we're talking about here is of the same quality, where it's quite simply doesn't even fit our current paradigm. So how we create space for the really radical new stuff to emerge is that third role. And it's not something that can be planned. It's really the conditions for people to connect to an intuition they have, or a sense they have of something, and then to give them the space to really experiment with that, explore what it means, deepen their understanding of it, make a mess of it, learn from it, try again. A whole process of that prototyping and iteration process, but really, 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 really giving ourselves permission to, to go to actually get out of the box, not even think out of the box, to get out of the box and find ourselves in completely different terrain. It's what Howard Bloom, when he's talking about, the core elements of a system, would talk about as that's when you need your diversity generators. We don't, it's not, that's not a role for conformity enforcers, who do have a role to play at a next stage, but you really need your kind of your weirdos, really. where are the loonies? We need the loonies now. Who are the people where everyone's going, well, they're crazy? We need to start looking at what is it that they're actually seeing, what it, and is it, could it really be something? And where are the others? Because if we can begin to notice that actually there's a bunch of people who seem to be completely, thinking totally, totally different thoughts, and then we begin to notice that, oh, look, there's actually a pattern in the kind of things they're talking about, then we're beginning to get a sense of maybe this is the new story that's starting to unfold. So it's not, we don't give every loony totally free rein, but in the collective, we begin to notice whether, okay, actually these people have something in similar. So we can be kind of crazy together, and when we're crazy together, we actually realize we're maybe not that crazy after all. So to create the conditions for really that radically new thinking to emerge, for the experimentation, for the failure, for the learning, and then to notice which things seem actually to be working and beginning to grab a foothold, and immediately channel resources into those and help them, develop and stabilize. And then we begin to, and then kind of, and then begin to go, look, here seems to be something which is really beginning to, it's really beginning to work. And then to start making that explicit and look at what's the DNA of that new thing? What are the principles which are scalable across location of those new things, which can be adapted to local contexts, and really kind of start sharing that DNA and getting it out there and allowing people to experiment with what the expression of that DNA means in their own contexts. So, that requires courage and vision and leadership in organizations, because it doesn't look anything like the way things are currently done in the organization. So it really needs space, it needs protection, it needs leadership to protect it. It requires leadership not to evaluate results in the way they evaluate results from the old system. It requires them to give things space, to think about totally different ways of measuring success, and all of these kind of things. So it requires courage, because you're going to have to channel resources to it. And often that happens in a period where you're actually beginning to enter a little bit of a maybe a financial crisis, because you're finding the old systems don't work anymore and they're not generating income. So it really requires a step of vision and courage to say, we're really going to channel time, energy, and finance and people into searching for what it is. And it doesn't mean that you abandon all your current operations, because you've got to keep running the system. until the new has emerged enough to be able to take it over. And that's one of the big challenges, you know. And one of the big things we actually have to swallow is, God, you know, I can't just, we can't just swing over to the new because it's not crystallized enough. And we have to continue doing things the old way, even though we know ultimately they're not functional and they're not the right way to do things. But until something new is there, we have to keep doing it. And I can imagine, you know, for a leader today, that's one of the biggest challenges, I think, to be able to sit with that knowing. So that's that third role of really creating the kind of non-linear emergence of new stuff. So we've had protecting the good in the old. We've had hospicing the old stuff to die gracefully and fertilize the soil. And then we've got this third one, which is enabling the emergence of the radically new and the experimentation around that. And the fourth one is then, so as the patterns begin to emerge in the new, we can begin to tell a story about what the old is and what the new is and what the difference is. And we can begin to illustrate that concept with stories of best practices. So stories of things which have begun to emerge, which are actually already working. So that at that point, people, you know, and those have been the innovators. If you look at this kind of process of innovators, early adopters, late adopters, laggards, etc., you've got your innovators who've been able to create some stuff that works, where you can go, look, you know, the new to the kind of early and late adopters, look, this new stuff, it's not really so loony. Look, these people are doing it already and it's working. So that role of illuminating the gap between the old and the new, and creating the bridges, and those bridges, I think, are often in the stories of stuff that has begun to work, which enables people to relax a little bit and go, oh, well, maybe I could do that actually as well, because, you know, if so and so can do that, then well, maybe we can have a go at it as well. So it lowers the threshold and enables the kind of larger volume of early adopters and, you know, and the late adopters to begin to move into that phase. So what's so important in that is that in the previous phase of it, of emergence, is that we really are disciplined about documenting our learning and documenting the emergence of the new stuff, so that we then have the story to tell, you know, that we really make that process of emergence visible to the rest of the system, so that that system can say, you know, can track it and can actually see the new story unfolding over time and get used to the idea that, you know, this is actually happening and there's some real stuff emerging out of it. So I think that's a critical part of identifying, of illuminating the gap and bridging it. So those four
Now, I was just going to say that's the harvester's role.
Yeah, absolutely. The role of harvesting, yeah, absolutely critical. And they won't be the same people as the people who are doing the, you know, the action of making it happen. So that's a specific role which we really need to be including in everything we do at the moment, which is emergent, because we need to be capturing it, sharing it. We need to be generating a new story. You know, we need to be generating the story of the new, because at the moment our TV screens and our newspapers are full of the story of the old and the story of how the old is dying, and we really need to start telling the story of how the new is being born, to give ourselves hope and to act as an attractor, apart from anything else.
With really gifted harvesters is that they detect patterns much earlier than most people do as well, so they can actually see the patterns before the rest of the system and flag them up, and so you can actually get speed up that way as well.
Right, absolutely. So people who have the ability to identify the DNA of something, which is then potentially scalable, and can be adapted to different contexts. Yeah, a critical capacity. You know, we really need those people in that role as well. So those four roles we try, as soon as actually after we'd done the Art of Hosting, there was a great opportunity to apply it, which is in the Environment Ministry over here. I should give it its full name. It's the Ministry for Spatial Planning, Housing, and the Environment, and they're going through a whole change process at the moment. And the change team, who have been going for a couple of years, were looking at their own transition from, okay, how do we stop this being just a separate program, which is like advising or working on the ministry, and really integrate this change process now into the ministry as a whole. And as part of that process, they were wanting to look at, well, what is it that we've actually been doing, and what are the things we still need to do, and what are the things which other people need to do in the organization? So we actually then worked with the meshworking process around pillars, a set of core pillars, and conditions around those pillars. And the core pillars for of the how of change for this change team, the core pillars for how of change, were these four roles. So the four core pillars were protecting the good in the old, hospicing the death of the old, creating the conditions for the emergence of the new, and illuminating and bridging the gap. And then what we had the change team do was reflect on, so for each of these pillars, what are the core conditions that need to be in place in order for that pillar to be strong? And the way we framed those conditions was using Ken Wilber's four quadrants. So we said, you know, reflect on each of these areas. So what are the conditions, the mindset conditions that need to be present? What are the behavioral conditions that need to be present? What are the cultural conditions that need to be present? And what are the structural and organizational process conditions that need to be present for each of those four pillars to be strong? And so they went through that process of identifying stuff. And we then took it a step further and linked it to a performance indicators and gave them a four-stage maturity model and said, now, mark how advanced you think each condition is on a four-stage maturity model. So from, you know, not advanced at all to, you know, getting there, or starting up or getting there and totally completed. You know, it wasn't exactly that, but that kind of concept. So what we were immediately able to do was to harvest all of those conditions with their own evaluation of the maturity model straight into an online system, which with the Gaiasoft system, which combines this the performance management with the maturity models in it, all the people in the collaboration environment, and the knowledge piece. So, you know, where are the stories of stuff which we're already doing, which is going well? Now, what that immediately did was that helped them identify what they were already doing, what they weren't doing, and a lot of what they weren't doing was around the hospicing piece, hospicing the death of the old. And the other great thing which came up was, so on the Gaiasoft system, you can then categorize it all by quadrant. And we did that, and the upper left was blanco, so there was nothing in mindset. So what immediately the insight that gave them was, oh, our own awareness, our own consciousness is not shining its light on that upper left quadrant. So we need to start giving that attention. What's the mindset piece around conditions, and what are those conditions of mindset? Because up until now, we've not been identifying those. So now what they can do is they've got a kind of map organized around these four roles and different conditions, where they now know what they have to do. Because, you know, well, this is where we want to be with each of these conditions around each of these roles, and this is where we are now, and this is what either we as the change team want to be doing, or no, we should be having this embedded somewhere else in the organization for somebody else to be doing. But so now they've got an overview and a measurement system, a collaboration context where you link individuals to specific accounts, where individuals are specifically accountable for certain conditions, so you know exactly who is meant to be accountable for what, and the knowledge database where you can link in all the stories and best practices to that. So that's so that was an immediate application. You know, this isn't just a concept, these four things. You know, immediately, I didn't have to even convince them of it. I just shared with them these four, and they were, oh yeah, that fits. That's totally obvious. So let's operationalize that. So this is, you know, something you can really go out there and apply.